day, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, hello there, sir.
Good morning, Robbie.
Good morning to you.
Yeah, it's a new day.
It is. Another beautiful day in the podcast neighborhood.
In the podcast neighborhood, where the temperature and everything is perfect, but yes. Outside it's cold.
Is it? Is it cold for you
it's
guys?
It's cold here. I think it's cold there too, right?
Yeah, it's pretty cold in Vancouver.
Yeah? What's the temperature?
It's sunny today. We've had a beautiful weekend, and it's been really sunny, but cold. Winter is here.
Winter has come. Freezing? Is it below freezing?
No, but I'd say it's like 40 or something, 40 Fahrenheit.
That's cold. That's cold for us. For us ex-Californians, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
Right? Yeah. All right. Exactly. What's the temperature in Utah right now? Do you check on that at all or not?
Really? I do. I check on that.
You do?
It's been nice lately. We've already had in Utah. At the house there, we have like Nest cameras on the house that I can just go on my phone and look at the yard and things like that.
Yeah.
And we've had a couple of snowstorms already.
Okay.
In October.
So, yeah.
Yeah. The snow's not in my property, you know, in the yard or whatever right now, but we've had a couple nice storms come through. And so the mountains, you know, in the distance around the valley there, are just covered in snow already. It's beautiful.
So really a beautiful landscape outside your home. That's wonderful. So Utah gets snow in October. That's kind of like how Canada is. You know, Canada starts snowing in October. So, all right. Okay, so you ready for this week's episode?
Yes. What is it again?
This is Message.
Message in a bottle. That's right. Yes. Okay. Yeah, let's go watch this.
Okay, everyone, we're going to go watch Message in a Bottle. Robbie and I will be right back. And for all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. Hey, everyone, we are back from watching Message in a Bottle. My goodness.
Yes, we are.
Oh, boy.
That's funny. Aww. I still can't believe I remembered Andy Dick was in this.
I'm shocked.
I know.
I'm shocked.
This was really fun. I got to say, this was one of my favorite episodes that I've seen.
Wow. My goodness.
I feel like we're on a roll this season.
Hey,
four.
Man. Yes. Well, see, this is indicative of every Star Trek series. It's always the first three seasons are finding your way. And then all of a sudden, season four, things start really moving. Mm-hmm. Or at least I'm not going to say every. I'm going to definitely say it's the same for TNG, DS9, and Voyager, where the fourth season is where. Oh yeah, it's starting to move, right?
I feel like there's a lot of good episodes this season, and this was one of my favorites. So yeah.
What's your 1 to 10er? What are you gonna rate this?
I'm gonna give this a 9.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'm gonna give this a 9 out of 10.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I'll do the same. I'm gonna give it a 9.
Wow.
Okay. Because I remember this being, and I talked about this before, you know, this is an episode that was it's fast moving, it's fun, you know, it's a fun episode. Really, really fun. All right, let's start off with our poetry synopsis. Here is my haiku for Message in a Bottle. 7 detects ship. Doctor is sent on mission. Andy Dick funny.
Yep.
Okay, good.
Yep.
All right.
Nice.
Yes.
Okay, let's hear now your for collaboration. Our limerick.
Yes.
Our limerick the synopsis.
Robbie Rebecca collaborated limerick. Let's hear it.
Okay, so here is my limerick poetry synopsis for Message in a Bottle. Our sensors detect a Starfleet ship. Then Janeway sends Doc on a trip. Is that Andy Dick? EMH teamwork does the trick. Now home is in Voyager's grip.
very nice.
Yes, I got Andy Dick in there too.
You did get Andy Dick in there. We're thinking on the same wavelength here.
Yeah, we are.
Very nice Robbie Rebecca collaboration. Limerick. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Let's just talk about the guest stars real quick before let's jump into this.
Well, let's talk about So Message in a Bottle, directed by Nancy Malone.
Who I don't remember at all. This is this woman became Kate's good buddy, right? Or was Kate's good friend?
I think Kate's good friend before. And they stayed very good friends. Yeah. Nancy Malone and Kate were super close.
Doesn't Nancy Malone have a house in Ireland that Kate stayed at? Something like that. Does this ring a bell? Maybe.
Something like that. Nancy, I know Kate and Nancy were very close.
Okay.
I don't remember a lot more details than that, though. I really don't. But I know they were very close. And I think that's why Nancy came on the show was because of Kate.
Because of Kate. Okay.
I think it was they were friends before.
Right.
But I thought Nancy did a great job. I really did. I thought it was really well directed. Story by Rick Williams, teleplay by Lisa Klink. Lisa, come on. This was a great script. It was
she did funny. A good job. Oh my gosh.
So good.
I want to pat Lisa on the back on this one. Now, the name Rick Williams, does this ring a bell for you at all?
No.
Yeah, this is the only time I think I've seen his name. I mean, the only connection I have to Rick Williams or that I can think of is Ricky Williams, the NFL running back who
which I doubt was the story.
I don't think the Heisman Trophy winner from the University of Texas, you don't think he wrote this? I think he wrote it.
I don't think so. No.
Okay, fine.
Okay, Lisa did a phenomenal job. I really mean that. This is a really strong script. It's funny. It's smart.
Yeah.
It's well structured.
Yes. I don't remember that she wrote this script. So that's that. I'm even more impressed. I'm like, wow, fabulous. Good job. Good job.
Andy Dick, obviously our guest star. We can talk about him a little. He was Andy Dick, I think, was part of a group that met in college, and I could be getting this story wrong. Okay. So I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia. One of my good friends when I was growing up, childhood friend, is David Cross, who was a stand-up comic, and he was on Arrested Development.
David Cross. That's your buddy?
Yeah.
Wow. You still talk to him?
I haven't talked to David in a long time. I'm still very close with his sister, Wendy, and she lives in Atlanta. And I talk to Wendy quite often, but I haven't talked to David in a while, but we were good friends growing up, did a lot of children's theater, community theater as kids. Anyway, David Cross goes to college up at Emerson in Boston. And we sort of lose track. And then a few years later, I hear that David Cross is working with his college buddies, some of which were Ben Stiller, Janine Garofalo, Andy Dick, and a few others. And they had started doing I think it was an Emerson radio show or something, comedy on the radio together. And I think Andy Dick was part of this. So either he went to Emerson and met them all in college or teamed up with them because they started doing these little short comedy bits on MTV. I don't know if you remember this back in the late 80s.
Oh, right.
It was Ben Stiller doing these bits and David Cross was writing and Andy Dick was in them and they were all doing these MTV bits. And then that led to a series on Fox, which was a relatively new network back then, called The Ben Stiller Show. And you can find it on YouTube or whatever, but The Ben Stiller Show was a sketch comedy show on Fox.
Yeah.
Like a single cam, Ben Stiller hosted it and Andy Dick was in it.
Right.
So anyway, Andy Dick was very hot. You know, this is by the 90s when we start doing Voyager. That was my memory of Andy Dick. I was like, he and David Cross and Ben Stiller and Janine Garofalo and who else was in that? Kathy Griffin.
Yes.
Yep. Kathy they were Griffin. all in that. Bob Odenkirk was also, I think, on the Ben Stiller Show, which led to Mr. Show, which was David Cross and Bob Odenkirk on HBO back in the late 90s. Anyway. That's the context of Andy Dick for me. I'm like, oh yeah, he was definitely, a very modern and hot young comic actor.
Right.
About my age, you know. He was contemporaries and friends with some people I knew. So,
well, see, really, now. Yeah, go ahead. You're going to say. You really
I was going to say I was really excited when I heard he was coming on the show.
Yeah.
Although I don't remember ever crossing paths with him because that story with him and Bob was so isolated. It was just so, you know, off on its own. And I don't think I came in for scenes when I wasn't working. So I don't remember if we even crossed paths on set. I don't think we did. I don't think I ever met him.
I really didn't meet him until he was on the show. And then, of course, when the Star Trek Experience opened, he was there as well. So,
yeah.
And I do recall probably 2001, you know, towards the end of Voyager, I was at I think it was the Mondrian Hotel on Sunset. They had a nightclub there and I was, or a bar there, and I was there and I bumped into Andy there. And this is after he had guest starred on Voyager. And I was like, "Hey, Andy, how's it going?" And he's like, "Oh yeah. Hey, Garrett, what's up?" So we had a bit of a conversation, which was interrupted by Kathy Griffin. She walks up, and that was the last time that I saw him. I would have to say the funniest thing I've ever seen him do was a movie called And God Spoke. Have you seen this film before?
I think so. Yeah, I remember the title.
Oh my God. So funny. So funny. Okay, let's move on to our other guest stars. We have Judson Scott, who played in Star Trek II. The Wrath of Khan. He played Khan's right-hand man. So that's his earliest. And then he also did I think he did a guest star on TNG, and then he did our show. But definitely very memorable from Star Trek II, the film Wrath of Khan, which many people find to be one of the best Star Trek films of all time.
Yeah. I think Judson Scott also went to Juilliard to school.
Did he?
Okay. I think he did.
All right.
Which is funny. He was way, you know, early on in the drama department there. That's where I went to school many years later.
Yes.
So,
and then he went on to do soap operas as well, like you did. Mm-hmm, so he did General Hospital in 1985. So there you go.
Yeah.
Juilliard, and then soap opera, and then
sci-fi. And then Star Trek.
There you go. Yeah.
Valerie Wildman plays Nevala, the other Romulan on the bridge. She had quite a bit to do. The guest star that I was excited to see was Tiny Ron. Tiny Ron was a professional basketball player who became an actor and did quite a few things, but he played the Herogian Idrin or whatever.
Yes.
Tiny Ron. He also did stunts. Okay. And things like that.
Right. Isn't Tiny Ron not tiny? He's
6 foot six or something.
He's a tall guy.
He's a giant guy. He was the nicest guy. I do remember Tiny Ron when he came to get suited up, because I think this is the first time we see Herogian on our show.
It is.
And I remember them testing, like they were developing this makeup. I remember Scott Wheeler in the trailer sculpting this Herogian makeup for a long time, making changes. Yeah. So that had been in development for easily a month or two.
Right.
And then Tiny Ron comes in to put it on, and he's like, he has a duck coming in the trailer.
Huge, big man.
And he was a really friendly, fun, down to earth.
Well, he was
not tiny.
No, but he was in this episode and the next episode as well. He's in more than one episode, I think.
Oh, I didn't know that.
From what I recall.
Yeah, Tiny Ron was not so tiny.
No.
Love it. And I think that was it for
guest stars. Yeah, we have them
all right. So we start the episode. B'Elanna and Chakotay are walking down a hallway, and she is mad. She is wound up.
She's not happy.
She's mad at Seven because Seven is bossy, and you know, Chakotay's like, "What do you want me to do? Lock her in the brig?" And she's like, That's not a bad idea. Because she came into, I guess Seven went into engineering, took something without asking, and then went back to astrometrics and locked the door.
Locked the door behind.
Wouldn't let her in. And then all of a sudden.
I didn't know you could lock doors.
I
thought everything
either.
Just, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Wouldn't let her in. And then while they're arguing about this, Seven calls for Chakotay, and she's like, "Chakotay, report to astrometrics immediately."
Yeah.
And he's like, okay.
Yeah.
So. It's very funny. Already funny. I'm laughing.
Very funny.
And he's coming around another corner, and here comes Janeway. And And he goes, oh, astrometrics? She's like, yep.
They've both been summoned,
I've
right?
Been summoned, yeah. Exactly. They go in, though, and it's not locked anymore. She must have unlocked taken the lock mechanisms down.
Yeah.
But Seven shows them in astrometrics that she's located a Starfleet vessel.
Yes.
And that's kind of how we end. She's located a ship, and it's a Starfleet vessel. Bum, bum, bum.
Right. We're like, how's that possible? There's another Starfleet vessel in the Delta Quadrant? What? That's what you're thinking as an audience member.
And then we go to our opening credits, which I just got to say, we have really good opening credits. Like when the ship flies through all those amazingly beautiful shots, it's in the song. It's a really good opening credit scene.
Did you get your screenshot of your name?
I don't know if I did. Probably. Oh, yeah.
Like visual effects, or somebody came over and gave all the actors.
That's
Like
I
a
don't
little
know where it is.
Put in not a plaque, but put in a
like a frame or
like
something.
A frame saying, "Hey, here's your name," right? And I remember Bob Picardo was so upset because when Seven of Nine showed up, his name moved. If you think about it, it goes like this because. It lists Kate first.
Oh, his name moved forward though.
It moved to a point where there's nothing. Like you see nothing. So it's sort of like, oh, like he didn't get any cool planetary background, you know, anything like that.
Oh, I see.
So because it's alphabetical after it lists Janeway, right? So it goes so Janeway first, and then it goes Beltran, and then everyone alphabetically. So Picardo,
moved up to Jennifer Lean's spot.
Something
probably.
Like that, because Jerry Ryan pushed his name forward and then he got nothing. And he was so upset. I remember him telling me, he was like, my name, it has nothing behind it now. And he wasn't happy about that. And
that's funny.
Random observation of mine there.
All right. So we come back to astrometrics and Seven says that the Starfleet ship is in the Alpha Quadrant. Mm-hmm. And the way that she's discovered this is there's this large network of abandoned relay stations and this
alien
ship,
alien relay stations. Let's say that it's not Starfleet. These are just
no alien
has them there. Yeah.
We don't, she doesn't know whose it is. It seems to be abandoned. These That's relay right. stations and the Starfleet vessel that she's detected is near the outer edges of the Alpha Quadrant near these relay stations or close enough that the relay stations can pick it up. And she says in 41 minutes, they're going to be out of range. That's all the time they have to get a message to Starfleet. And we don't even know if we can do it, but we're
correct.
We have 41 minutes to try. Not much time.
No.
And I did notice in the scene, Kate is kind of walking up on the platform in astrometrics and kind of looking out at the network of relay stations. And it just reminded me of like how much Kate likes to walk on the bridge and in these scenes. Like she likes to move around and, you know, the rest of us don't do that, but definitely Kate likes to kind of move across the bridge, move across. Maybe it's just because she is the captain on the bridge. She's used to kind of bringing the camera and moving the shots around. So it was funny in astrometrics, you know, Seven and Chakotay just stand there, but Janeway is kind of pacing over here and walking up on the thing. And I love it.
She's a mover and a shaker.
Yeah. I wonder if Rick Colby sort of instilled that in her in the pilot.
I think that's a good guess. I do.
Yeah.
I mean, they became quite close. So I do believe that could be a distinct possibility.
Yeah. That was his style of sort of blocking, keeping the shots moving and things. Mm-hmm. So, Anyway, so we cut to the bridge and Seven sends Harry the interlink frequencies for all these relay stations. And Janeway sends a voice message with the coordinates of where we are. Mm-hmm. And everyone's tense and waiting. She sends out this message to Starfleet. And we're waiting, getting anything. And then all of a sudden, something's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
But it's her message.
Right.
It's like all distorted and it's basically her message is just bouncing back.
It's the same message. It's kind of like that earlier episode we reviewed where we listen and we're like, oh, it's another ship, but it's really still Voyager that we're listening to. Yeah.
And by the way, when the message bounces back, it sort of had the sound of like the old, like dial-up modem sound almost like, like that.
Was it the AOL dial-up sound?
And I was thinking, that's an analog sound. Like,
yes,
that's,
it is.
That is not a sound that is created anymore in a digital world. Our cell phones are digital. Our computers are digital.
No.
Analog is gone.
No.
And
but this is the time when this episode was filmed. This was during the time that AOL, everyone was on AOL. It was all analog. It was all dial-up, right?
Dial-up, yeah. So Seven says that the message is degrading, and B'Elanna says, well, maybe a holographic signal, if we send that, it won't degrade so fast as the one, you know, we're sending out our signal, but it's getting bounced around and degrading and it's not going through.
Right.
If we send a holographic signal, which that's B'Elanna's idea, super smart. And then, I think Janeway or B'Elanna says, are you thinking what I'm thinking? The doctor.
Yeah.
And it felt like a warp particles. Yeah. It felt like a warp particles moment to me. Not exactly, but I was like, oh, we should have done another the doctor at the same time.
Yes.
Would have been funny.
Yes, yes, yes.
So B'Elanna runs into a sick bay and she downloads the doctor into the mobile.
Well, the
doctor's
very hesitant. He's like, well, I'm not sure. I mean, she doesn't even wait for him to respond.
No, she downloads him while he's
Yes.
Yes. It was funny.
Yes.
And that was all one shot. And Nancy, the director, I thought did a beautiful job because it started on the doctor doing something in the foreground, then came over to B'Elanna coming in. And in the same shot, she beams him out or downloads him into the thing and then grabs the hollow emitter and walks out. Hard shot to do. Like, she did a couple of those in this episode. And I thought it was really well done. The timing of designing those kind of shots, because you have to freeze. There are moments where you do have to freeze and people have to walk out, but it feels like everything just flows together. I thought it was really well done.
And it was the mobile emitter that she grabbed.
Into the mobile emitter. Yep. Mm-hmm. Nice, very nicely designed beam out shots.
Agreed.
And so we see the doctor in astrometrics now, and they've caught him up on what their plan is. And I loved his line. When I requested more away missions, this was not what I had in mind. There's so many good lines in this.
There's script. A lot of good stuff. Agreed.
Yeah. And B'Elanna explains that he's going to be sent like a message. And then when he gets to the other side, he will automatically be activated in the Starfleet vessel's holo network. He'll automatically pop up.
Right.
And we're running out of time now. Seven keeps calling out the time. She's like, 90 seconds left. We got to do this.
Right. But they also tell the doctor, and once you complete your mission, obviously the Starfleet vessel can then turn around and get back into the range where he could be sent back. Right.
And they'll send you back the same way. She says, another line in this that I love where the doctor goes, well, far be it from me to turn down an opportunity to become a hero. I'm ready. It was just
so smug,
so dry and so funny. But he beams over to the sick bay on the other ship. The message does go through. The doctor does appear in the sick bay on the Starfleet vessel, the Prometheus, we find out. And my first thought was, this looks like a TNG vessel. The sick bay to me, it looked like a TNG era set. I don't know if they recycled some set pieces for this, for the bridge. I just felt like the whole Prometheus ship felt a little TNG era to me, or recycled in some way. I don't know why.
I didn't get that because just because the color scheme is lighter than the TNG ship. There's more whites going on, or,
may have painted it, but something about like the set pieces, it all felt a little bit like not quite our Voyager era design. It almost felt like, instead of more futuristic, it almost felt more backwards in the inside.
You thought it was more retro then. Okay.
I did.
I didn't get that feeling. I did buy the fact that it's supposed to be more modern than Voyager.
Oh, really?
I felt that.
On the outside, I thought the outside looked super cool, by the way.
Right. But the inside.
The inside looks great. But the doctor's there and he finds nobody's there.
No.
And as he's going around looking at the consoles and trying to get some kind of connection to the internal comm system, he sees a couple crew members injured and laying, unconscious on the floor. He wakes one up, gives him a hyperspray, comes to for just a moment, and he says to the doctor, Romulans have taken over the ship. And then he dies.
Thank God he had that much life left in him. Just enough to say, Romulans. Yeah. And then die.
And then die. Yeah. Exactly. Right. And then we go out to the cool ship shot. This is what I did think was cool. Mm. The Prometheus looks super cool. His pointy nose. And and we find out a lot of cool things about the Prometheus. One thing I did while I was waiting for you to finish up, because I usually finish watching and noting before you. Yeah. I did a little Prometheus research and found out something interesting about the ship. That there was some kind of confusion when we were making this episode, Message in a Bottle.
Okay.
And it involved the registry number of the Prometheus. So Mike Okuda used the number NX74913 inside for all the internal displays for the ship's dedication plaque. It was NX74913.
Yeah.
But that info did not get to the post visual effects company Foundation Imaging that made the outside part, and they use the number NX59650. The numbers on the outside don't match the numbers on the inside of the set. They didn't get the memo, I guess, and used a different number. So there is a discrepancy, which I thought was, but the thing about the inside numbers is they're much smaller. So like, the one on the outside of the ship for these for the VFX shots, you're going to see that number on the outside of the ship. Mm-hmm. It's really hard. You'd have to be in a super tight close up on a console or something to see those numbers. So, but I just thought that was an interesting little detail.
It is, but you know what that tells me is that communication is key.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's anything that ever gets messed up in any film or TV production is because someone dropped the ball. Yeah. In communicating what needs to go on, right? I mean, you have to really work on your communication skills. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's another reminder of how big the machine is that makes these shows. Like,
exactly.
You know, there's a filming crew, there's the actors, there's the actor support, you know, hair, right. Makeup, wardrobe, all that.
Yeah.
But then you've got a construction department, an art department, your makeup lab, which was a whole different department than just the on-set makeup people. You've got your writers and production office staff, your VisFX and editors, and you've got your orchestra scoring thing. Like so many people trying to work on the same page, literally. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you don't. Sometimes like things just get, you know, slip through the cracks. So, yeah, that was an interesting one, I thought.
Yeah, they talk about it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a village to make a TV show or a film, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we go on the bridge.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of Romulans.
Right.
Yep.
There's a bunch of Romulans.
Romulans on our bridge.
They're being chased right now, right? Aren't they being chased? They're being chased by a Starfleet vessel.
Well, they're being chased by a Starfleet vessel, and they're not really sure how to run this ship.
No.
They're like, we're not really familiar. These systems are not familiar. And there's a Starfleet vessel approaching for intercept. And so they get ready for battle.
Yeah.
And so that we leave with them getting ready for battle back to sick bay. And the doctor's trying to ask the computer there about the ship because he's not familiar with it either. The Romulans aren't familiar. The doctor's not familiar.
Right.
And the computer, Majel Barrett, starts to tell him all about the ship, that it's an advanced vessel intended for deep space exploration. Mm-hmm. It has something called lots of other things. But then she says a multi-vector assault mode.
Yes.
And he's like, multi-vector assault mode, please describe. And she says, you will need more clearance for a description on that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is something cool. Mm-hmm. I thought that was just a cool idea, cool name. And
it is a very cool name. And I've abbreviated to the MVAM. So the MVAM is what I'm calling it.
Oh, the MVAM.
The multi-vector assault mode. Yes. Uh-huh. The MVAM. And I'm guessing that the Romulans did keep some of the Starfleet members on the bridge alive just to get the information of how to operate the MVAM, because they seem to know, because they do operate it in the next scene. And that MVAM, the multi-vector assault mode, is basically the ship splits into pieces, into separate pieces, and they then go on to, well, you then determine what type of attack mode and then who is the target. And boy, that thing looks pretty special. Pretty
it was kind of cool. Yeah, when it broke into three parts
Yeah.
And I thought it was also interesting that the bridge went to blue alert. They didn't have red
not
alert.
Red
they
alert. Blue. It's blue alert. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's an auto separation, goes into three pieces, and they basically take out the Starfleet vessel that's approaching with one shot of this MVAM. Like, bam, they're done.
They're finished.
And there's a Romulan in the background in this brief exchange of gunfire. There's a Romulan that sort of takes a spark. Did you see that guy in the back?
Yeah.
And I thought a couple of things. One is that spark was facing his face. And I don't know, you know, when we used to do sparks or those things, they'd always put them sort of behind us to protect our eyes. Because when those things go off, there are residual, you know, I would feel it on my hands. I'd feel it on my neck. You'd feel it. And so it wasn't enough to really hurt you if it was behind you. But if it's in front of you, it could blind you possibly. So I was like, that was a risky spark hit in the background there, because he was facing it and it kind of came toward him. You know, it could have gone in his eye or something.
They could have also told him, close your eyes, keep your eyes closed when this happens. Or they could have put some goggles or some type of glasses that you couldn't see from behind.
Right? Yeah. Maybe they did that.
Right. Cause I can't imagine they would have allowed him to just take those sparks in his face. That's, you know, I don't think that would have been the protocol for the day. I think they would have done
well. Something. I know that, and this is probably a much longer discussion. I know that, you know, safety on set, in light of things that have happened recently on
films,
safety on set is always something that people try to be very, very aware of, because people can get hurt. You know, we're doing a lot of dangerous things like that, like sparks. You know, it's pretend, but that's real sparks that could really blind somebody. Yeah. And it's just not worth it. It's not worth people getting hurt. We should all go home from work.
Definitely. And historically speaking, there have been accidents on sets, tragic accidents, right?
Well, I mean, the guys that did the sparks and any of our onset effects, the smoke, the sparks, the doors opening and shutting, they're called the onset effects team.
Yeah.
And Will Toms was our door guy.
Right.
But what was his name? The head of that?
Dick Brownfield.
Dick Brownfield. Yeah. Dick Brownfield. Do you remember? Dick had a couple of fingers missing.
Dick was missing a yes, he like, was. It's like, wait a minute. The head of all the sparks and explosions has a few digits missing. Yeah. And you're like,
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a dangerous.
It made you think.
My point is it's dangerous what we do sometimes. I don't mean to overstate it, but.
Right.
But I don't want to understate it. It is real. People do get hurt.
And, I agree.
So that was a moment where I was just like, it reminded me of like that. Hopefully he did have goggles on. Let's say he did.
Yeah. Okay. Let's say he was safe.
We go to sick bay after this. And the next thing I loved is Bob's trying to hide behind a console or something and with sparks or whatever the shakes. And then they bring in that injured Romulan.
Yeah.
And he just sort of pops up like, okay, I can't hide here.
Well, yeah. No, he pops up and then he looks behind him to see if there's any place he can go. And then he realizes there's no place. So he goes into character. He's he pretends he's just been activated.
Please state the nature of the medical emergency.
I love it.
Yeah. It was very funny. Mm-hmm. Home run for Bob and Andy Dick in this. Very funny. And by the way, for the rest of us, like I was really happy with some of the light comedy that I did and, you know, the scenes that you and I had.
Oh, we had some great moments as well.
I was really happy with the light comedy.
But Lisa Klink's lines between when EMH2 Andy Dick is activated, the lines that are being thrown back and forth between Andy Dick and Robert Picardo are classic. Like right off the bat, you know, Andy Dick's like, who are you? I know everybody on this ship. And then he recognizes him. Oh, EMH Mark One. Yes. The beady eyes. I love that. The beady eyes. Right. And bad bedside demeanor. And then the Picardo comes back with EMH1 comes back with, I was saving Voyager from annihilation when you were only a gleam in your programmer's eye. I mean, and then of course, Mark Two has to come back with, you know, we don't use scalpels or leeches anymore, which is hilarious. There's a lot of
insulting each other back and forth. It's very funny.
Which really, up until now, we're only used to the doctor throwing out these kind of comments.
It's great to see somebody coming back with him. It was so fun.
He's met his match. He's met his match, which is just, I mean, I think all the fans that watch this episode for the first time are going to be just they're going to be overjoyed with glee. They're going to be like, this is awesome.
Well, I also noticed Andy Dick must have watched a bunch of episodes with Bob because he was doing a lot of things like our doctor, our holographic doctor. He was behaving, at least initially, for sure. Very much like a holographic doctor, a little combo of like Data and the holographic doctor.
Right.
I thought it was great. I loved, I loved our doctor's line when he's, you know, Andy Dick's going on and on with all the insults. And Bob goes, well, if you just disengage your vocal subroutines for 1 minute, I'll explain. Basically, if you just shut up for a minute.
I didn't remember that one. Okay. Yeah.
Disengage your vocal subroutines for 1 minute.
I love it.
Yeah. Mark II. There is a scene where a moment in here where our doctor Bob starts getting really bossy and Andy Dick deactivates himself. And so the doctor like rolls his eyes and reactivates him a moment later.
Yeah.
And Andy Dick's like, what'd you do? Why'd you do that? I don't know.
Yeah. It was very good. Funny. Really good.
Yeah. Nancy Malone. Very good. Very good shots there. Mm-hmm.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I think we're on the bridge now, right?
Okay.
Yeah, we're on the Voyager bridge. And my note here is, my face looks fat.
Really?
What I wrote down. Yes. Again.
I like these shots. I wrote down.
No. The shots are fine. I'm just saying that this is the time when we're all gaining weight.
I thought all the shots were very flattering.
Okay.
I thought Roxanne looked great. She's obviously pregnant. We haven't mentioned that again, but she's wearing the pregnancy
overcoat.
But she's glowing. She looks great. I thought that shot of you and me, you're down. Harry's down by Tom's station.
Yeah.
Just waiting for this message for the doctor to let us know what's going on.
No, I love the shot. I love the shot. Don't get me wrong. I think Nancy did a great job there.
And the fact that Harry's down by Tom's station, you never came down there.
Never
were down there. Never. So it to me, it said a lot about like, oh, look, Harry and Tom are, you know, kind of talking about what might happen if we hear from home. It was a nice, simple way to reflect the bonds that the cast have, you know, the characters had.
Yes.
And
just like I'm never down at Con, you're really never up at Ops either. You know, very rarely do you see Tom Paris hanging out at Harry's station. So it was a nice shot. I enjoyed it.
It was nice. And Chakotay and Janeway talk. There's a moment where he asks what she's doing and she's sort of coy. And she's like, I was writing some letters to my family. And then she pauses, looks him deeply to Mark. I was just like, oh my God, it's dripping with subtext about romance and her relationships. And
I wrote down, you don't need Mark, you've got Native American Mark right in front of you.
Exactly.
That's what I wrote down. So
just dripping with subtext there.
Mm-hmm.
And Chakotay says something about, well, he admits that he wrote a letter to his cousin in Ohio. I was like, Ohio?
What?
That's just such a random and specific place to have family for Chakotay. I wouldn't have guessed that, but it's nice in a way that it's not stereotypical, that it's just, it's Ohio.
And I think any of the fans that are watching that are from Ohio are probably like, they said my state. Yes. You know, Ohio natives are rejoicing over this.
Good. So we go to sick bay and Paris is the doctor now.
I love that. We see Neelix first, right?
We see
a female crew member, and then we also see Joey. Remember Joey, the kid that was sitting there? That's Joey. And
Neelix is there, worried about some people. A few people are really sick. You know, you can tell they're sick.
Yeah.
And Paris walks in. He's the doctor now, and does a little scan.
Yeah.
And basically says, Neelix, they've got heartburn.
Right.
Like, no big deal.
Yeah.
And and Paris asks Neelix, you know, he's going to get them some antacid basically for Neelix's food. And, and Paris says, what'd you feed them anyway?
Yeah.
And Neelix says, Rodeo Red's red hot rootin' tootin' chili. like Rodeo Red's Red Hot Rootin' Tootin' Chili.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Couple of things. Paris's hair.
Yeah.
It's longer. It's longer. Different. Yeah.
A little fluffier.
Second thing. Rodeo Red's Red Hot Rootin' Tootin' Chili. Immediately when that scene came on, Megan says, "That's what you just said in the prior episode. Do you remember this?"
I said that.
I said Robbie said Rootin' Tootin'. She goes, "No, you did." So she goes back and finds it. She shows me a prior Delta Flyers episode where you bring up for the second time about how one of our listeners slash viewers said, "Well, you guys aren't doing the poetry. You're not doing the limericks and the haikus right," or something like that. Right. And right. I say in there, I go, "No, we shall no longer speak of this any longer. We've already made a point. I think our poetry synopsis, they're darn good. They're rootin' tootin' good." I said that in the episode. And then Megan goes, "Foreshadowing," you know, for this episode.
That's which so is, funny.
Yeah. It was so
random. How many times do we say rootin' tootin'? Not very often.
That's the only, I think rootin' tootin' is only said once by me in telling you to not talk about this. Actually, it's the episode with our guest host with
that's right,
yeah, when he joined us, Eric, right? So it was during that conversation, during that Delta Flyers episode, that I said rootin' tootin', and that's probably the only time that I've ever said it. Or you definitely have not said it.
No, it's a
and
it's
then
a-
Neelix saying rootin' tootin' is the only time any Voyager person has ever said that.
I would think, right? So.
Yeah.
I would
come
think
on.
So.
Rootin' tootin'. Yeah.
I loved how Ethan Phillips, that Neelix, as he was leaving, the way he delivered this last line when he leaves, he goes, "You know, next time, I think I'll use a few less jalapenos. And then I liked my face afterwards as he left. And this is where I made a note. Like, I feel really good. I'm going to do a little humble bragging. I feel really good about, like, the light comedy that Tom Paris and the way that I did it.
Yeah.
I feel really good about it.
No, like, you did a good job.
I was really happy with the light comedy. I don't get the big laughs the doctor, Andy Dick. I'm not the character actor, but I... You know, for just a regular guy, I thought I was getting some light comedy stuff.
I love that. That's what made me love this episode, because we were allowed to finally be a little bit funny here and there. I think we all knocked it out of the park, you know,
in
this episode. I was super, really great. Super happy. And the whole jalapenos thing, when you live in California for as long as we did, you're used to all Spanish pronunciations of all city names, food names. We know this, but there's a large percentage of the U.S. population that don't have a lot of Spanish speakers. And so then, you know, they
like
talk
Neelix,
about
who doesn't know, he would call it jalapenos.
Exactly.
We go back to the doctor and he's trying to come up with a plan
in the Prometheus sick bay,
and they're back in the Prometheus. And he thinks about the ventilation systems.
Yeah.
And is there any, any sedatives on board? And he decides to deliver through the ventilation system neurazine in a gaseous form,
Yeah.
So that will knock everybody out.
Yeah.
And I love his line when the doctor brags about his hollow emitter. He says, "I'm as close to a sentient life form as any hologram could hope to be. Yes. I socialize with the crew, fraternize with aliens. I've even had sexual relations." And then Andy Dick goes, "Sex? How is that possible? We're not equipped with..." And Bob says, "Let's just say I've made an addition to my program."
An addition to my program. Oh, my God.
That exchange.
This one-upsmanship is just so funny. You know, this whole time, the EMH2 is throwing hurdles. Like, no, there's no way. What are we going to do? You just waltz onto the bridge? You can't do that. So he's always throwing hurdles out. And the doctor has to problem solve. He's like, what are we going to do? Oh, we can incapacitate the Romulans.
Well,
he's being the hero.
It's kind of like, I think in this episode, one thing I liked was that the doctor is a fish out of water, needing to be the action guy.
Yes.
And the Prometheus. And Paris is a fish out of water, trying to be in a, you know, much more minor B story. Right.
Trying to be the doctor.
Trying to be a doctor. Like, he's a fish out of water. He doesn't.
Definitely.
You know, that's
and in a way, Andy Dick's character is also a bit of a fish out of the water because this is an experimental ship. Mm-hmm. It's also, he's an experimental EMH. He just was installed 6 weeks ago. So he's brand new too. So there's a lot of fish out of water storylines going on.
Yeah.
I love Andy Dick's physical comedy and trying to get into the Jeffries tube.
He doesn't know how to crawl into a tube. He tries to go backwards.
His foot comes out awkwardly. Then he does that weird thing where he just... shifts his body. So funny.
Good physical comedy. We don't normally do that on our show either. No. It was very, very funny.
No.
We go to the bridge and
the Prometheus bridge.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, with the Romulans. And the doctor enters and he reports that the crewman is getting better.
Yeah.
And he lies about a possible virus on board. He needs to scan them all. So he starts... Yeah.
The Trovka virus, mm-hmm. a nasty strain of the Trovka virus, was detected in the injured Romulan's blood work. And he says, yes, I've got to run these scans. And he goes, he starts scanning the Romulan commander. Rikar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was walking behind him and chasing him around the bridge, you know, scanning him on the move. It's very funny.
Right.
But he's also kind of eavesdropping on everything they're talking about, like the Romulans are going to rendezvous with them in an hour.
Yeah.
So he's picking up a lot of information here. Mm-hmm. And
and the information is they're not going to, Commander Rikar makes a course change, right? He mm-hmm. alters the course heading because he says we have to meet the Tal Shiar. The Tal Shiar are the equivalent of the CIA, KGB, mm-hmm. right? So they're basically a what's the word I'm looking for? They are a intelligence agency. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So the
uh-huh.
intelligence agency for the Romulans.
Before the scene is over, Rikar, the Romulan realizes that the doctor was not really scanning him, right?
Yeah.
He's like, let me see what you scan. He looks at it and it's like, there's nothing.
You haven't scanned anything. Bob's reaction was like, oh.
He looks at it.
Deadpan.
He kind of takes it back and shook the tricorder, hit a couple buttons. Really? I thought I was. It's very funny.
See, that's Bob Picardo. Because I don't think the doctor himself would actually shake the tricorder, right? That's Bob Picardo infusing his own physical comedy into it.
Very funny.
Yeah.
We go back to Voyager sickbay,
yeah.
and Paris is trying to be a doctor. He suggests next time order the chicken salad and not the rootin' tootin' hot and spicy chili.
Right.
Then Harry walks in and Paris is like panicking, desperate. Yeah.
Is this the scene where you pat me like 15 times? And you're like, hey, buddy.
Yes.
Yeah.
By the way, when the door opens and I see you, my arms go up.
Yeah, they come up. Like, you're like,
I thought I was going to run across the thing and hug you. And then I do go over to you and I put my, I'm like, what do you see? And I put my arm around.
You're so touchy feely right
now. I was very touchy feely. I felt like we were going into a slow motion montage of Paris running across the sick bay, you know, with the sunset. And he was going to.
You were so touchy feely. I was uncomfortable watching it. I'm like, what is he doing? Why is he keep doing that? So now we find out he wants Harry to program a new EMH so he doesn't have to be the doctor anymore. Mm-hmm. Right. My two notes here are, number one, my makeup is so dark. I wrote that down. I look like, I don't know, maybe I went to Hawaii earlier. I'm so tan in that shot.
Wow.
And once again, my face is so fat. I wrote that again. So, and nothing against Nancy Malone's decision of how to shoot that. It's not her shots. It's not our director of photography. It's not the lighting people. It's just, I know I ate extra junk food then and I'm getting fatter and fatter right now. So
it happens.
All right.
We go to Astrometrics. B'Elanna and Seven are in there. Mm-hmm. Basically this scene is about B'Elanna just going, Seven, you're a jerk. Like, you're rude. Just say please. Say thank you. Don't boss people around. We're not your drones.
Jerk. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You say jerk. I say it's a conversation about lousy interpersonal skills. That's what I wrote. So that's the more euphemistic way of saying it.
But it was a nice scene, and we don't normally see those two together.
No,
it was fun to watch them.
I love those two
scene together. Mm-hmm. But they do get a signal. Seven receives a signal in here, and for the first time, we see a Hirogen.
Oh my gosh.
Tiny Ron.
I almost, I almost squealed. I Megan will attest to this. I was like, oh my God, the Hirogen, they're here finally. Yeah. So I love this, this alien species. This is one of my favorite alien species from Voyager. So seeing the Hirogen for the first time, seeing Tiny Ron on that screen, I was so excited. So it was happy. Cool. Yes.
But he basically says, stop using our technology. Those are our relay stations and terminate your link now, which would mean we'd lose the Doctor. We'd never get him back.
Right.
So now there's another problem.
Yeah.
And then we go over to the Prometheus.
Well, he severs the link, right? So basically Torres says like, wait, the sensor network, that's yours. And he's like, yeah, it's Hirogen. And then he says, terminate it. And before she can even say anything else, he severs the link. He cuts it off. Yeah.
Problem. Big problem.
Yeah.
We cut over the Prometheus. Doctor is a prisoner now.
What room is that? Would you call that a ready room? Would you call that the captain's ready room that he's in?
Probably.
Or a briefing room or somebody's room, quarters? Maybe.
I think it was a briefing room.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Rikar wants to know who the Doctor is working with. He's like, you're a hologram. You can't be doing this by yourself. Mm-hmm. I did notice Nancy Malone was shooting these low angles in that scene, which, you know, always helps to kind of amp up the tension and the stakes. And again, just a little detail, but as the stakes are building, she's starting to use these low angles, things getting more dramatic, just really subtle detail, but very well done.
Well, if a low angle ramps up the stakes, what does a high angle do then?
It can do that as well. Usually a high angle, if you're shooting down on an actor, it suggests that there's either someone watching them, almost like a surveillance point of view, or even unconsciously, not a literal surveillance, but a sense that you're being watched in some way, or that there's pressure. You know, there's some power outside of your control you know.
Gotcha.
That's what I would say.
All right.
That sort of weakens the character, makes them small. But Doc is not cooperating. And so our female Romulan, I forget her name.
Navala comes in with this information. She says an optronic data stream transmission containing a holographic subroutine has been detected. So now, you know, Rikar thinks, wow, this is very ingenious and creative. You are a Starfleet agent that was sent in, a holographic agent, basically, which is kind of cool if that was really the case, right? The data pattern has a Starfleet signature, and that's what makes Rikar think that the Doctor is a secret agent. And Navala suggests a complete algorithm extraction to analyze the Doctor's subroutines one by one. This to me sounds like being drawn and quartered the medieval way, right? So this is the modern version of drawn and quartering for EMH. And the Doctor's, you know, he's nice and calm, really, pretty much. Yep. But before anything can happen, gas starts filling the room. And guess what? The Neurazine has been let out.
Delivered. They pass out. Andy Dick appears. Yeah. And then he tells his dramatic story. Like he's a narrator
I love that.
There I was in the Jeffries tube. And he goes through the whole thing.
Do you think that was written in the script? That he stands off and he sort of narrates this thing? Or was this something that... Okay.
I think Lisa Klink wrote this.
Okay.
But it's very funny.
It is so funny.
This arrogance, this competition of the two most arrogant men.
When he calls he calls Picardo his smug comrade, captured by Romulans. Oh my God.
But the holographic Doctor's transfer to the bridge, the Prometheus bridge. And I love when the Doctor walks over to the pilot's chair, just shoves the pilot who's passed out from the gas.
Yeah.
Just like shoves him and, you know, falls like a rag doll on the floor.
I have a note about the site-to-site transport. When they go from that room, the interrogation room, to the bridge, that shot where they arrive on the bridge, you don't know it's the bridge immediately because
it looks like they're in the middle of space.
I thought EMH2 wasn't familiar with how to transport and he transported both of them into space is what I thought. That's my first thought.
That was a fun moment. Just another moment of like, wait, where are we?
Where are they?
You realize they're on the bridge.
Right.
Just a very funny scene of neither one of them know how to operate
the ship or anything. They have no clue.
Stop it, start it, do anything with it. They keep hitting the button.
The Doctor does talk about he had learned a few things from Mr. Paris. He's had two lessons
in the holodeck,
on a shuttle.
Yeah, that's about it. Yeah. And they're pushing something, and all of a sudden they hear beep, 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 beep. I love when Andy Dick turns and he goes, beep, 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 beep. I laughed out loud. I was like, that's funny.
Very funny.
The warp core is overloading. That's what they did. They hit some buttons and now they're going to overload the warp core.
Right.
And he doesn't know which buttons could stop it. And there's three Romulan warbirds approaching.
Yeah.
So we're, you know, things are not good. Looks like things are bad. They don't know what they're doing.
Not at all.
And here come the bad guys. We go to Astrometrics.
Yes.
Then, and Janeway is talking to Torres and Seven.
Yeah.
And they bring up the Hirogen up, and she begs the Hirogen, please just, you know, let us use these relays. We're waiting for a message. And he's like, no, absolutely not. As the Hirogen do.
Right.
And all of a sudden you see like sparks and the Hirogen going, and he falls down.
Tiny Ron gets shocked.
Yeah. I thought he was dead for a minute.
That's the funniest part of the scene. Seven says, I generated a feedback surge along our sensor link. Just totally calm. And the look on Roxanne's face and how she delivered that line, you killed him? It was the best. I laughed so hard. I mean, it's not funny to kill somebody, but in that moment, very funny.
Very funny.
He wasn't responding to diplomacy. Like, okay. It's exactly. Like, what? And the look on Janeway's face was like, oh my God, you've just made all these decisions on your own without consulting me. Yeah.
There goes Seven.
That silly bored gal. That's kind of the look that Janeway gives Seven and to Torres when she walks out of the room.
Yep.
Very funny scene.
Very funny.
God. You did laugh at that, right, Robbie?
I did. It was very funny. Okay, good. Yeah. All right. Everybody was funny in this episode.
Good. So we go to Voyager's sick bay. And now we have Paris and Kim and our lovely comedic scene that we have here. You start off with that wonderful line. You think we should give him a little more hair, which I loved. And was that your decision to knock on the doctor's
It was either me and Bob or the director, but I don't know.
I'm going to guess that was Bob's decision. That seems like a Bob. I can just see Bob going, Robbie, I think it might be funny if you actually knock on my head. You know, I really hear his voice saying that.
Yeah,
but whoever's decision it was, whether it was yours, Bob's, or the director's, very funny.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Very funny. Yeah, it was funny. And then so when we finally activate him and he kind of fritzes and starts reciting.
That's not in the scene yet. Is that in the scene?
Yeah.
Did we do that whole thing? Oh, it's all in here, right?
It's all in here. Yeah, you get him up. And so it looks like Harry has succeeded. He's got the hologram, the holographic doctor appears and he's finishing downloading all these medical databanks.
Grey's Anatomy,
everything into the program. And then when he hits the go button, the doctor just starts reciting medical textbook. He's just staring straight ahead.
Chapter two.
And I don't know if you noticed, but if you looked at Bob's eyes during all of that, I think he was reading some cue cards. And I think I remember them having some cue cards in the room because it was a lot of data. And I don't like he was staring straight ahead and his eyes were kind of doing this.
Oh no, I did not catch that.
Yeah, just a little bit.
I did not catch that.
Which absolutely I would have done the same thing. Like that's not a criticism, but but I think and by the way, if it's a holographic character, he could have been sort of internally, you know, his eyes could have been
It could have been moving
scanning because the data or whatever.
Yeah.
But it was very funny.
Oh my God.
And then the scene ends basically with Harry sort of downloading Grey's Anatomy into a pad.
You look at my face when I'm doing that. I'm like, okay. Yep. It was a very sort of like, all right, Paris, you troublemaker. Then this is for you, which was just lovely.
It was very funny. So Paris has homework at the end of the scene.
He does. He's
got a lot of studying to do.
He does. We cut to an exterior shot of the three Romulan ships converging on the Prometheus. And I got to say, I love the Romulan ships. They look so awesome. They really do.
Yeah, they do. The Doc and Mark II holograms are arguing.
Prometheus bridge. They're just trying to figure out the controls. They have no clue how to operate.
No clue at all. Then the doctor pretends when the Romulans close in, they call the bridge and the doctor pretends to be Rikar for a minute. And he's like, You're not Rikar. Where's Rikar? Bob's doing a funny voice and then he's trying to fool them. Very funny.
Oh gosh.
And then the Romulans start firing weapons. And then Starfleet shows up and they're firing weapons. So everybody's firing at the Prometheus.
Yeah. Yes.
And the two holographic doctors are like, what's going on?
Yeah.
They try to return fire. There's just too many buttons.
Right.
At one point, Mark II leans on the console and hits
it's
the wrong...
It's sort of a frustration thing. He's like, ugh, and he puts his hand down. Just sort of and leans that, up. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And because he's going, you know, there's not going to be any more time to, I'm going to be dead. No time to explore.
Yeah.
No time for sex. Cause he really wants to add that addition. That doctor. And he leans,
down, which then reminded me of when Paris and Torres were having their makeout session in engineering on the second level. And they're rolling across the control panel, hitting everything. Right.
And nothing happens.
Nothing happens there. Yeah.
But they end up,
they activate the MVAM. They activate the MVAM. Yeah. Multi-vector attack mode.
Multi-vector attack mode. And then the computer says, what attack pattern? Asks the doctor. And he's like, attack pattern
alpha?
Alpha?
Exactly. With the question mark at the end.
Yeah. But it's very funny.
Wouldn't that be funny if the computer could register the question mark at the end and says, are you sure? it responds back to the question mark at the end of alpha. That would have been funny too.
But they succeed and they're both heroes. And so it's a big win. And we come back over to Voyager. Seven has gotten the transmission through the network and gotten the doctor back. Mm-hmm. And he fritzes in to sick bay.
Yeah.
And he is pumped. He's like, I did it.
I'm going to pat myself on the back a lot right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's so proud of himself.
Yeah, he's very proud of himself. And and he tells Janeway that he spoke to Starfleet and that Starfleet thought they had given up. They thought Voyager was lost.
Yeah.
And he said, I set the record straight.
14 months ago, Voyager was declared officially lost. That's the information we learned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he said he set the record straight. And they promised that they would do everything they could to get Voyager back home. And he says, his last line there was, he says, they wanted you to know you are no longer alone.
Alone.
And I love that. It was a nice.
Great ending. Great everything.
Great ending. Yeah.
Good episode. Really good. Really good.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What was your theme for this?
Well, my theme was sort of like persistence is key. Don't give up hope. Don't give up hope. It took 4 years for us to just get one message to Starfleet that we're not dead. We're alive. And, you know, sometimes people in the society that we live in, the day and age that we live in now, it's always like, what can you do for me now, now, now? It's so immediate. Everyone wants they want something to happen immediately. And when it doesn't happen immediately, people just throw up their arms like, oh, well, this is not working, you know, and they just give up. And it's like, come on, guys, sometimes things take time, you know, have some patience. Don't give up. That's it. Yeah. So that was my lesson from this.
Great. I think my lesson or my theme was don't be afraid to try something you've never tried before.
Okay.
I think for the doctor to go be the guy in the front lines, the hero, he's used to being a doctor, but he was able to succeed.
Yeah.
Like you said, persistence and believing in yourself and being willing to take a chance on something new and do the hard work. He was able to do it. And same thing with Paris and as the doctor. He didn't want to be a doctor, didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
I mean, again, a very minor B story at best, but it was a nice echo to the doctor's journey that Paris was like having to do something he wasn't comfortable doing.
Yeah.
But he did okay. He was able to get through it.
So then I would add on to this, you know, don't be afraid of change. And that's something that a lot of times human beings are so nervous and they're so like, oh my gosh, this is different from what I'm used to. Will I succeed? Will I fail? Well, you should embrace newness or embrace change because sometimes it opens another chapter in your life that you would never have expected. And that chapter could be far superior to the prior chapters of your life. So don't be afraid of it.
Awesome. Well, cool. That was fun.
It was fun.
What is next week's episode?
Next week is Hunters, which should probably give you a little key. Yeah, you should probably know what this is about, right?
Yes. Oh, this will be fun.
Yeah.
We are on a roll of some episodes that I actually can remember.
Yes.
And I remember enjoying.
And they're great episodes, right?
They're really good.
Yeah. Right? We've got our legs now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that'll be fun. All right. Well, I'll look forward to reviewing and rewatching this with you next week.
Ditto. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in for this week's episode, Message in a Bottle. Stay tuned next week when Robbie and I will be reviewing, recapping, discussing Hunters. Thanks, everyone. See you next week.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.